Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Joanne Ferrian, host of Room 20 with the LA Times, and this is OPP.
God bless everybody, and welcome to another episode of OPP, Other People's Podcasts, America's number one discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is award-winning journalist and Columbia University journalism professor, Joanne Ferrian, host of the current number one podcast in the country, Room 20. From the LA Times studio and the team that brought you Dirty John and Man in the Window comes Room 20, a story about a man who's been unconscious for 15 years, his identity, and the truth about his accident. Joanne's two-year journey is filled with twists and turns. At the end of the series, she finally reveals who this man really is. I met up with Joanne on the campus of Columbia University, and we chat about her new life here in New York City, her career in journalism. We get into her podcaster's picks, and of course, we get into her dope show, Room 20. So let me introduce you to Joanne Ferrian. We're recording now.
Hello.
What up, Joanne? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm amazing. First of all, it's nice to be here at Columbia. This interview is hilarious because it started off with you being in San Diego.
That's right.
And then midway through being like, yeah, so, you know, I'm a professor at Columbia. And I'm like, wait, like Columbia the country or the university? And you're like, no, in New York City. And I'm like, wait, can we please do this in person? And you're like, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you came all the way out here.
No, it's a pleasure. It's like it's a nice little Xanadu. Mm-hmm. Word of the day, Xanadu.
Yeah.
That's what Columbia feels like. It's like a little oasis away from the hustle and bustle of the city. It's very calming and relaxing.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's nice to see the campus is pretty.
Yeah. And like seeing like New York City is one of those places where you just don't see youthful, like young people.
Uh-huh.
You see like 20, you always see drinking age. Drinking age and above. But you don't see 18, 19, 20 year olds.
Right, right.
In like one mass place. It's really nice, really refreshing. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you like being here.
Yeah. So wait, how long have you been in New York City?
Only a year. This is my second year teaching. So I moved here last August for this position. Yeah. Before that, I was in San Diego.
And how are you liking New York? How are you making the transition?
Oh, so, you know, I still spend 2 months in the summer in San Diego. That's where my son lives.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, I got back late last night and I just thought, New York is so hard. Like, I have a bag full of laundry that I have to like walk 8 blocks with. And like I opened up 2 suitcases and I have no place to walk in my apartment. Everything's tiny. But you know, it's New York, right? It's hard, but it's New York.
But you should get the delivery service.
Well, I tried that, but then I don't have a doorman or a door person.
So are you going to walk up?
Yeah.
The delivery person may be able to come walk up and take your laundry for you.
But then I'd have to be home because the door's locked.
Oh, this is true.
Yeah. No, because I looked into that. Like,
but what about on Saturdays?
Yeah, I guess I could do it on Saturdays. Yeah. Look, you're solving my laundry problem. Oh. I just thought I had to find a new apartment with laundry.
I don't touch laundry. I don't do that.
No?
I do the drop-off. Okay.
I do the drop-off, but I have to walk. Oh, delivery. See, I need the delivery.
But it depends on like where I'm living. If I move and the delivery spot's a little farther away or it's more.
Yeah.
If it's across the street, I have no problems dropping it off.
Yeah.
And luckily, I'm across the street from the laundry now.
Yeah, mine's 8 blocks.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Oh, and you're on the west side too, near the water.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, it's brutal. But it's okay. It only gets better from here, I promise.
That's my only complaint, so that's not too bad, right?
Is this your first time teaching at a university?
It is.
Wow.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Jumping right into the Ivies. For the Ivy League.
It's been beyond my wildest expectations, actually. It's the students, they really, really want to be here, right? They've worked hard to get here, and you can tell.
Yeah.
Very nice people. It's been, my first year was a great first year. I'm excited about year two. I teach reporting, right? Basic reporting when students come in, and then a writing course. And actually, the second semester, I teach an audio course.
Oh, so, get out.
Yeah. So it works well having a podcast.
Right. I was going to ask you, when I was in school, I went to school for journalism, but I only went for like 2 years. But I was not like these kids at Columbia. I was out being a rock star in college. But How has podcasting played a role in the way that teachers are teaching journalism now? Has it changed at all? Is it coming up in conversation and lectures and stuff like that?
Well, I think what's happening, the thing that comes up is, how do we tell stories now? We tell them across platforms, right? We don't just tell them in a newspaper, right? That isn't journalism. Journalism can be, it's video, it's audio, it's all these different sort of platforms now that we're sort of getting information and stories across. I think what's happening with podcasts, we have lots of students who come in and they want to work in podcasting. So I think that is what I'm hearing. I don't know if that's different. I've only, like I say, this is my second year. I think the great thing is that so in terms of the kind of podcasts that I want to continue to produce and the one that is out now, they're journalistic, right? Like, it's an investigative story. Yeah. And I think the great thing is that students are coming here, they're becoming journalists first. And then it's like, okay, now how do you want to execute, right? Well, how do you want to tell the stories? And a lot of them are now saying, yeah, I want to do podcasting.
How do you fall in love with journalism?
Oh, you know, so I remember in elementary school, I think I was in grade 6 and I started a newspaper in my elementary school. And I think it was my dad actually photocopied. I didn't even know what I didn't know how to make a newspaper, but I started one. I didn't think I was going to be a journalist though. I thought I was going to be a lawyer because I wanted to represent people.
Okay.
Right? I wanted to represent people who were accused of stuff and they weren't really guilty and I was going to fight for them. And then I did my Bachelor of Arts degree in English literature, and then I was going to go to law school. I wrote my LSAT, all that kind of stuff. And then I just thought one day, I think I want to be a journalist. I mean, my family always read the newspaper. I always watched television news, always listened to information radio.
Yeah.
So it was literally like I had this sudden change of heart. So then I enrolled in a 2-year journalism program in Winnipeg at Red River College, a place, a school no one has ever heard of, which I loved. It was an amazing, amazing, intense program. And it's what I've been doing ever since. I absolutely love it.
You know who you remind me of? Your energy? You remind me of April O'Neil. Remember the reporter from the Ninja Turtles?
No.
So in the Ninja Turtles, there was like, you know, the four turtles. But then their homegirl was April O'Neil, who was a news reporter.
I'm totally Googling her.
Yeah, but yeah. Your energy reminds me of April O'Neil.
Okay.
Maybe she's Canadian.
Maybe.
Yeah, what's life like in Canada? Like, what was it like growing up there?
So really, well, I grew up in Winnipeg, the north end of Winnipeg. And any of your Canadian listeners or anybody from Winnipeg will know the north end.
Okay.
It's, I grew up in the corner of Selkirk and Mackenzie next to Hank's Auto, and Hank was my uncle.
Okay.
And it wasn't even like a real residential area. There were like a couple of these rentals that Hank owned, and my family rented one of them, and there was all like pool halls, there was like a funeral home, little corner stores, stuff like that. It was really, really sort of rough area. And I have two older sisters and a younger brother, and I don't know, I think it's... anybody from the North End wears it like a badge,
yeah.
You know? It just, it was interesting. And I lived in Winnipeg actually until my middle 20s. I got married. I got married and then I started following my husband everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then I got a divorce and then I moved to New York.
Hey, you know what happens? Yeah. My parents got divorced too. It's like, you know, hey. Where did you live? You said you followed your husband around the country. Where did you travel around to?
So then I went to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and I worked at the CBC.
Say that again.
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Is that in Canada?
It's in Canada.
Okay.
It's the province west of Manitoba,
okay.
My home province. And I worked for the CBC there. And my son was born there.
Okay.
And then we moved to Calgary, Alberta, and I worked for the CBC there as well.
Okay.
And then we moved to San Diego, and then I started working for the NPR and PBS affiliate in San Diego.
How long were you in San Diego?
I was in San Diego since 2001, so a really, really long time. Yeah.
You're like rooted there.
I'm American now, kind of. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. Joanne, yeah. We get back. We're going to get into your podcast, Room 20.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. So how did you first learn about the medium of podcasting?
Oh, I think because I've been in public radio for a long time. It was always just podcasting, right? I remember, I want to say it was like 7 years ago. I have this neighbor. Well, he's not my neighbor anymore because I moved. But him and his best friend, they were the funniest guys. And they went to college together and they're really into music. And they went to see like any band you mentioned, right? They went to see them and they'll tell you where they saw them, what they were wearing, what they drank that night. They have all these funny stories. And then they'll play like the record or the album. And I thought they should have a podcast. Car Talk is an old NPR radio show. Uh-huh. They should be Car Talk guys, but, you know, for bands and all that kind of stuff. And so I actually made a demo of this show for my program director and said they should be a podcast. These guys would be amazing, but it never went anywhere. So it wasn't something that I thought, oh, I really want to do this, but I love a good idea. I just love a good idea. And I thought, it's a great idea. And these guys are so funny and I'd listen to them. They should still get their show if anyone wants to produce
them.
There we go. Yeah. They should have a show.
How did you get compelled to tell this story, like in particular? Like where did it?
So it goes back to 2008. My mother died suddenly. And I became kind of obsessed about the way that people die. I started reading about, like, what do you look like in your final moments of death? Like, I was, for all of these reasons in terms of how my mom died, I had all these unanswered questions. I wanted to report on end of life, right? So I thought, okay, being an investigative reporter, this is kind of a chance to answer my own personal questions, yet still do this kind of reporting. So I also spent a year reporting on hospice. I wanted to document again what are people's final months like, weeks, days. And it kind of led me down this path. And then I find myself in this place on this unit where people are kept alive on life support. What you find out in episode one, I'll reveal it now, the podcast, because I disclose it fairly early on, is that my mother was in a medically induced coma. And the doctor asked my sister and I, what would your mother have wanted? And I have to make a decision in that moment. And this decision haunts me. And so it kind of propels me to do this kind of reporting.
Let me just ask you a very simple question. Describe room 20 for the audience.
So if you've been in a hospital room or a nursing home room, right, you know about how big they are. Maybe I'm going to get the dimensions wrong, but you know, it's like an oversized bedroom, really. There are three beds. And according to California regulations, the beds can be 3 feet apart. So quite literally, they're 3 feet apart. At the end of the room are patio doors. And beyond the patio doors is a tiny little sort of patio with a giant hedge. So, but it's sort of, the irony is like nobody in this room can walk or get out of bed. So, I mean, you know, I'm the only one who ends up opening the patio doors. But so three beds, and there are three men in room 20. When you go inside the first door, there's a guy they call Papa, and he's in his 70s, an old guy. He actually is conscious, but he has a breathing tube in his throat, and he has a feeding tube, and he grunts when he wants something. In the next bed, when I first got to room 20, it was empty, but that changes. And then in the final bed is the man that they call 66 Garage. And again, he has these tubes. So it looks like a hospital room with a lot of medical equipment, not a lot of room to move. And there's a black folding chair in the corner, and that's where I end up spending so much of my time.
I heard that you were there for 2 years. It was 2 years of reporting.
Yeah. So it's funny because the day I started reporting on these nursing home units in 2014. So on this unit. And then towards the end of 2014 is when I find out about this guy in room 20. But it's not until nearly a year later that I quit my job in 2015. And that's when I go off and I basically embed myself. When I say embed, I mean I go to room 20, sometimes daily for hours every day, sometimes weekly, on and off. And so basically, by the spring of 2017, lots of changes happen and sort of room 20 is no longer room 20. So yeah, it's about 2 years.
I don't want to give away too much of the story. I want folks to go and listen to the podcast. But what did you you know, I always want my, when I interview folks, I want them to walk away learning something. And I learn, I want them to learn something, but then something, I learned something personally for myself that I take away. What did you personally take away from this story of 66 Garage that surprised you?
So much. I mean, so things I learned journalistically, just like discovery. I mean, some of the issues I learned so much more about consciousness. What is consciousness? How do we evaluate it? How do we determine who's conscious and who's not? I learned a lot about I had done reporting on people who were kept alive this way, but being there so much, I learned a lot more about what life looks like when you're kept alive in that way. I also, you know, I've been a reporter so long, right? And I've always mostly worked for public media or, you know, iNewsSource, which is investigative. So for where we follow a lot of rules, right? Journalism actually has a lot of rules. If you do it right, it there's a lot of rigor behind what we do. And then we have lots of layers of editing and managers and how we do things, right? And most newsrooms have certain protocols and rules. And I'm a rule follower. I mean, I just am, right? And so when I quit, I quit my job. You know, I didn't think it through. It really was a pretty spontaneous decision. And I have to tell you, for a long time, it looked like probably one of the worst decisions I had ever made in my life. Yeah, it's all worked out now, but for a while, it was really, really bad. And so when I did this, part of me just, I wanted to go and do this reporting and this investigation and be a reporter and not answer to anyone but myself. You know, like I wanted to go, like, and I literally, I mean, I went all throughout Southern California. I went to Mexico. I went to Canada. I went to Ohio. And I just wanted to do it for me and not be calling in at the end of the day and reporting to an editor who said, well, you can't do that, or you got to come back now, or no, don't even bother with that. Like, I just wanted to go and be a reporter for me and, you know, and find this out. And I realized how much I liked it, but also, I mean, you can't, like, realistically, we couldn't run newsrooms like that. But so I learned a lot more about reporting. I learned that as journalists, we, you know, if we go somewhere for a day and we parachute in, there's only so much of the story we can really know, right? Let's say you do it for a week. Well, maybe we know a little more. We cover it for 3 months. Or I was lucky in my past job. I sometimes worked on things for an entire year, right? I was not the only thing I worked on, but I got a lot of time. What I learned too is, you know, immersive journalism, the kind where you really say, okay, I'm going to, like, sit here in room 20, you know, for however long, you also start to form relationships with the people that you're reporting on, which is very, like, new, not new, but it's a thing we don't do as journalists. But I found that I think I told a more true story. And I say more true because, you know, if I was there for 5 more years, my story might be different, right?
Yeah.
Like, my ending would be different too. Your ending is where you decide to end your story. So I found that there's so much. We tell a different story, right, the longer that we stay.
Oh, when did you know that this story had to be a podcast?
I thought this story was a book. I thought this story was podcast. A lot of other people didn't think this story was a book or a podcast. I had a lot of rejection. So it goes back to, I quit my job. And then a lot of people rejected this. They didn't think it was a story. So I had no choice but to keep at it, pitching it, so that somebody would decide it was a podcast, because I didn't have any other choice, right? It was like, now what do I do? And I believed in this story. I mean, there were moments where I thought, is it a story? Does anybody want to know this? Like, I don't know. I guess I had gotten so personally involved in it too, that you sometimes, you know, you're do I have the best judgment to know that this is a story? I got really lucky, though. There's a woman named Susan White. She's my editor. So in San Diego, everybody in journalism knows who Susan White is. She is a 3-time Pulitzer Prize winning editor.
Oh, wow.
It was like, yes. And I didn't know her. I had heard about her. And I always thought, oh, if only I could ever work with Susan White. And so I asked her if she would go have coffee with me one day because I just wanted to get to know her. And we really hit it off. She knew what I was working on. And then when I was getting a lot of rejection in terms of this story, I remember calling her and saying, will you be my editor? I don't have a contract. I don't have any money to pay you, but will you be my editor? And she said, yes. And so then we became a team. And I think that, and she believed in this story as much as I did, and she wasn't willing to give up either. And so I think that's when I felt a lot better about it.
What's the biggest hurdle from, this is your first podcast.
So
what was the hurdle of you're independent and you're like, I'm going to make this podcast. How did you even know what steps to take to make this podcast even happen?
Well, I've been a reporter so long and I've worked in audio so long. It's not different. It's radio reporting.
Yeah.
Only with no clock, with no time limit, right?
Yeah.
And no boss.
So even better.
It's kind of awesome.
How'd you end up being an independent podcaster and getting your podcast
on
the LA
Times? Okay. So, then that's another story. Again, by somebody who came to my rescue. So here's Susan White and I trying to say, okay, you know, who sees this story like we do, and we're getting rejection. And then one day I asked Jeff Light, the publisher and editor of the San Diego Union Tribune, newspapers also owned by the same owners of the LA Times.
Okay.
And I'd met Jeff before, and I was a reporter in San Diego for a long time, so Jeff had known my work. I said, do you want to go have lunch? And really, I wanted to talk to Jeff about a job. And he said, what have you been working on? And I started telling him. And this lunch turned into like, it was somewhere between 2.5 and 3 hours. And he's a busy guy. And he just said, and then what happened? And then what happened? He's like, this is just the craziest story I've ever heard. This is unbelievable. And Jeff went to the LA Times with this story. And 8 months later or something like that after that lunch, it was months later, I didn't know that he told the LA Times about this story. I get an email from the LA Times. Hey, that story. Do you still have that, you know, what's with that story? And I met with him a week later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what is it like to have, you know, I come from a music background. So the one thing I love about music or I love about podcasting is that I can take an idea that happened in my head and I can manifest it and play some chords and I could write some lyrics and I could record it and make it into a song. And it feels really good to see that song go out and other people listen to it, enjoy it, give me feedback. But what's it like having the story that you felt was important now being the number one podcast in the country?
It's terrifying. And you know, I think that I'm always afraid when my story is published or produced or whether it's like radio, TV, print, like I'm always afraid. I'm afraid that I've made a mistake. I'm afraid that I haven't accurately depicted, you know, the scene. I'm afraid of offending people. I'm afraid that people who are in the story might feel uncomfortable or be bothered. I mean, it's. I think that's normal in journalism, like to feel that way. I wish I could say, yay, this is so, of course this is, it is so, here's the best part. Here's the good part really though. The story is really about how this young man loses his humanity the minute he crosses the US-Mexico border. Literally, from his name, he becomes a number to all of these other ways that he stops being a human. And this journey of the podcast is, how do you give it back to him, right? How does he get it back? And this is a story that it's not true crime, that I think the reason there was so much rejection was, is it commercial? Will people want to read it or listen to it or whatever, right? And I think there was the consensus was no. But the LA Times thought this is an important story. This is a story we need to tell, right? Because they saw the value in it. And that's why they invested in it. And so the yay, rah-rah thing about this is people have responded. And in that response, that's the humanity, right? That's how this man gets his humanity, because all of these people who don't know who he is know how important it is that he have a name, and we know how he got there, and we know about his life. And I think that's been the amazing thing, and it's been the rewarding thing, and it's the thing that was worth it all along.
Wow. Joanne, we are at a part of the show called our Podcaster's Picks. This is where I ask today's special guests to give me three podcasts that they love and describe them to the audience.
Okay. So my first two aren't new ones, but it's the investigative journalist in me who really, 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 really like them. And it's In the Dark, season two. And it's a true crime with a lot of, you learn a lot about the justice system. It's been in the news. I get that. Everybody who listens to a lot of these podcasts, I know that. But I just want to say, I just such respect for this podcast and for this story. And then another one that's Canadian, and again, this is just to my, you know, former workplace, the CBC. They have a series called, I think it's called Uncover, and there, I think it was season one, and it's Escaping Nexium. And I'm sure it's Josh Block, yes, the host and the producer. But this is a story that is so well told without any of the, like, bells and whistles, right, that you think you have to do. It's just this is great reporting, great storytelling, solid writing. I really, really like that one. You know, my third one, so this, I want to name sort of a smaller one. So I don't know if they have even a season two, but I think there were maybe five or six episodes. It was called Bodies.
Yes.
Oh, well, you like that?
I had,
Did you have her
Allison
on your show?
On the show?
I like that podcast.
Allison, oh, man. Allison Behringer.
Okay, yes.
Allison Behringer. And it was her on the podcast.
I love the one too where she talks to her mom on her episodes.
Yes.
And I just felt it was so honest and she was so vulnerable in it. And, you know, again, just such respect for what she was doing. I really like that
one.
No,
I'm a big fan of her podcast. I don't think it's come back to a second season. I think that was the first one.
Yeah.
It's so
I can't
good.
Believe that you had her on and that you like it.
She's
okay.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. No, I love that one too.
Yes.
So cool.
we should share that one.
That's good.
And Joanne, before we get out of here, why do you podcast?
It's just such a great way to tell stories now. Like, again, like as a journalist, you know, you only have so much space. When you're doing radio, it's like, oh, a minute, your story's up, or 4 minutes, you can't go any longer. And also, we get to be more transparent. In this story, in the podcast, I'm very transparent about my reporting process. So it's like a window in, right? You get to see, how did I find out this, or what about this, and all that kind of stuff. So I like that. I think it makes what we do, more accessible, right?
Yeah.
To people.
Well, Joanne, thank you so much for being here. It's so nice to be one minute we're talking. 2 days ago, we're talking over the phone
know,
in San Diego.
I know, that's so funny.
And now you're here in New York City, yeah. And I'm here in Columbia, and this is such an honor. Thank you so much, and congratulations on all the success of the podcast.
It was so nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
You're
I really
the bomb.
Enjoyed
you're the
this.
Best. Everyone, check out Room 20. We out of here. Yeah. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP and to our special guest, Joanne Farian. I'll have the links to Room 20 provided for you in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. Music for this episode was produced by Richie Quake. I want to send a very special thank you to my dear friends over at the LA Times, Allison Farias and Clint Schaff, for making this interview possible. And lastly, before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, Silent Giants, my podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. And I'll have the link to Silent Giants provided for you in the description of this episode. Well, I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. God bless y'all. Till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.